Step 9 is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So Deborah, we're looking forward to what you have to say.
Hi everybody, my name's Deborah. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Hi. Sobriety, last drink, April 3rd, 1987. Oh, this is, you know, before I forget, I do just want to say, of course, Thanksgiving, November is Gratitude Month. And I'm just so grateful for my sobriety. And I'm very grateful to be doing this step series with you. It has been very enlightening for me, and it's just such an honor. And so, like I said, I am extremely grateful. Extremely, extremely. So we are at step 9. Last week, with step 8, we made a list, which we reviewed with the sponsor, and recognized and admitted that our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God. There's a theme in these steps, and more and more. It's all about God. And remember, in step 1, we admitted that we're powerless. We have no power, meaning this is a spiritual program. Because we're looking for power in this program. The next few steps are dedicated to finding and connecting with a higher power, only then to find that we're blocked off from God by resentments and old ideas, old thinking. The process, it is very humbling to go through the 12 steps. While we ask God to remove our defects in step 7, there's even more humility to be undertaken, and that is to go to the people we have harmed in our lives and make direct amends for what we've done. Of course, this is the process by which the power flows in. There's nothing that we have to try to figure out. And even if it doesn't make sense, why do I have to go through all of this? Why am I doing all this? Basically, we know it works because, or I knew it worked because I watched it working in the life of old-timers when I came in. And, you know, an old-timer to me at that time was anybody with more than 5 years, so... So I knew it worked. This step is, of course, it is very humbling. It is a very humbling step. I'm just gonna look at, excuse me here, back to the front page. Okay. So we're going to try to get our list out, make an appointment. The thing is about step 9, it says direct amends, meaning face-to-face, person-to-person, whenever and wherever possible. I understand some of these things are very, very difficult. I'd rather not do it, but better to look a person in the eye, because then you know. You know if your amend was accepted, and you know what the other person, it is there for a reason. If you send a letter to somebody, you don't know anything. You know, if you never hear back or anything else, if your amend was even accepted. And the things that we're carrying around in our head, the wrongdoings, the resentments, the whatevers, I mean, these are the things that are in our head keeping us sick and mentally disturbed. And we're trying to do whatever we can do to clean up our side of the street so that we can stay sober and be a good use and purpose to those about us. It says here in our book that the alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Enoch Brand, the wind stopped blowing." And, you know, it's amazing to me even how much harm I caused other people, in my family especially, by the things I did while drinking. And really, it says earlier in steps 8 and 9 are mashed together in the big book. And it does say here that, what was I saying here? We're trying to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time getting my thoughts together. For me, like I said, going to a person, making a direct amend, the I'm sorry is not, to me, the proper way to make an amend. I've said sorry lots of times to lots of people. So when I'm making an amend to a person, the words I use are that I was wrong. I was wrong when I did, and I say specifically what it was. When I did this, when I said that, whatever it was, I was wrong. And usually at that time, you know, I'll say, you know, I really regret it, and I apologize very much, and wait for a response, maybe or maybe not. But what I usually do is ask what I can do to make things right between us, to whoever I'm talking to. What can I do to make this right? And, you know, be prepared to do it. I haven't had any, you know, major or crazy, you know, outrageous requests by anybody to do anything. I had one person, and this was an amend I made in sobriety to a person who also was sober, who did not accept, and she was... there was no reconciliation possible. And, you know, that was a very hurtful experience. But you know what? I was there, again, to clean up my side of the street. There's no guarantee that people are going to forgive some of the things we do, drunk or sober. There is no guarantee on any of it. But for us, it is the act of going to someone we know and humbling ourselves. It says here in the book that we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And so, you know, that's the reason for doing this eye-to-eye, face-to-face, looking a person in the eye and expressing your regret for the harms done, while at the same time being very careful not to criticize the other person, no matter what they did or didn't do. Sometimes, I in our book, it talks earlier about harms done to us by others, fancied or real. Meaning, some of the things we thought people did aren't even true. Didn't even happen. So, but it's all up here. It's all up here. And the harm it does us is just huge. And so clearing that up is the main purpose of this step. And it says here too in step 9, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. It says here that, you know, we cannot talk to our family members or others incessantly about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. And it takes, show me. You gotta walk the talk in this program to rekindle the love and respect of your family and friends and co-workers or whatever. I think for me too, I do just want to mention my brother, Bob. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer about 10 years ago. And, he was very ill by the time I found out about it. And I was still living in Pittsburgh at that time. And my sister-in-law wanted to bring him down to Shadyside for a second opinion. There's a guy, pancreatic. There's several at the Hillman Cancer Center. So they brought him down, and it was just heartbreaking. But when they came, they went to my aunt and uncles. It was easier to get him in and out because he couldn't walk at that time. The cancer was already in his spine, and he could not walk. So. And there were, you know, people coming in to see him, our cousins and everything. And I just, you know, it was like now or never. And we were down in their family room in the basement. And I was by myself alone with him. It wasn't for a very long time. And, you know, but I used that opportunity to make an amend to him. And I told him, you know, Bob, I was so wrong about so many things. And in his typical way, I mean, he did not really want to talk about it. And for him, it was a thing of all is forgiven. There was, you know, there was no animosity on his end. It was all the stuff that I made up in my mind. Ever so grateful that I had those few minutes alone with him to express my heart, and it was sincere. So it's, you know, as the things we do in AA, whether it's you know, the working of the steps is not the the primary thing of this program. We're working toward developing a relationship with God to fill us up. And These are the steps that have worked for so many since the book was first written in 1939 and published. It's remained unchanged all these years. And so the one other thing I do want to say is that, and I don't know, I've only been to a few meetings in Erie where the promises are read regularly. In Pittsburgh, they're read at every meeting. And the important thing I believe to know about the promises is that they come at the end of the ninth step. You have to get that far before you can expect to have or receive any of them. And on the bottom of page 83, it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. It's up to us. We got to do the work. And that's all I have to say about step 9 tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leslie. So now we're going to open this up to our question and answer portion. Oh, Deborah, I'm sorry. I was just looking at Leslie here in the room, sorry. We appreciate Leslie being here as well. Thank you, Deborah. So now, if anybody has any questions for our speaker, either here in the room or on Zoom, if you're on Zoom, just go ahead and unmute yourself when you have a question. All right, Jim.
Hi, Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
So, Deborah, I'm going to assume that when you're working with somebody and you'll look at their 8-step list with them. When you do that, do you prioritize maybe some of the step 9 amends as to where to start, and maybe if some are a little more involved, spend some time with them preparing to make their amends and how to go about doing that before they just blunder into something and maybe create more of a problem?
Yeah.
And I guess did your sponsor do that with you as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely like to review the list with people. Usually by the time we get to that step, let's face it, people are anxious to mend things up with their family members, and they frequently already went ahead and did it anyway. But yes, I do review it. I mean, and I think I did talk about last week the woman who was my sponsor when I initially did the 9th step. She looked at my list. She said, "No way do you owe amends to that many people." And I had everybody on there. You know, it's just this false sense of importance. But yeah, I. And if it's a difficult amend to make with a person, I definitely go over any concerns that this person I'm working with has. I mean, I've been around enough now, and I've been in a lot of difficult situations and relationships and work and family, and I do have experience. And, I mean, the working of the program, like I said before, you know, if you divide your steps up or your amends up into, you know, the ones you want to do immediately, the ones you are going to do later, and then the ones you're never going to make. You're never going to do those amends. What happens is if you start it, obviously, with the people you want to do it, it helps build your confidence. And helps to build up some of your self-worth, so that by the time time goes by, people want to make amends to the people on the second and third list. So that's been my experience with it. I mean, I am there to help guide people if they want and they need. The thing to remember before making an amend is to never go alone. Before you go in to make an amend to, especially an enemy, it's always wise to say a little prayer and ask God to go with.
Thank you, Deborah. Anybody else have a question? We've got Dana here.
Hey, Deb. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm praying for the day that we can all get together live again at these meetings. And
continue. I know.
Thank you so much for your insight. I have a question. Early on, you stated that apologizing isn't enough. And I'm assuming maybe I just didn't hear very well after that, but was your statement that we apologize, but the amends factor is our way of life and how we conduct ourselves? And when you said saying I'm sorry isn't enough, we say we're sorry. We've done that several times. But by making amends, it's how I live my life, and I show these people that I'm sincere in my apologies. Is that pretty much what you said, or?
Yeah. I mean, in a nutshell, and humbling yourself before another and saying I was wrong, to me, is much more effective. It is for me saying it as it is for the person hearing it. Because not too many people go around saying, I was wrong, please forgive me. I was wrong, what can I do to make this right? It's not a common thing. And it certainly lets the other person know that you're serious and sincere in your efforts. So I'm not sure who's talking back there with the red hat. I'm assuming you're a lawyer.
I play one on TV.
What's that?
I play one on TV.
Oh, you're one on TV.
This is Dana.
Gotcha.
Dana.
Oh, my God. I thought I was having to give a swear an oath or something. But, yeah, no, that's how I was taught to do it and told to do it. And I think it's most effective to do it that way. And I'm sticking by that.
I agree. And I just wanted to just make a brief statement that two years ago when my mother passed away, there was a lot of division between my sister and my two brothers and myself. And it caused a lot of grief. And it came to the point where my sister and I, who have been very close forever, and my oldest brother, we didn't speak for a long time. This last summer,
when I did my amends again, or when I did my steps again with my sponsor, this issue came up, and although I didn't think it was that important because it wasn't really bothering me, but I thought my sponsor saw it another way, and I had to. He insisted that I make amends to my sister, so and my brother, and I did. I wrote my brother a letter, and I expressed my sincere. And the reason I didn't call him is because I didn't think he'd talk to me, and I didn't hear from him for quite a while. But when I went to my sister's house, her husband was in the driveway, and he informed me that I wasn't welcome at their house. So that kind of set me back a little bit. I called my sponsor immediately, and he says, "Great job. Great job. You did it exactly the way you're supposed to. You made the effort."
Yeah.
And he what he told me was, well, what you said is, you know, I'm just going to continue to make amends by living my life the right way and asking God to guide me. And lo and behold, this summer one day on the golf course, out of the clear blue, I get a call from my brother, and it was one of the greatest days of my life, because he told me that he really wanted to get back together and be brothers like we were before.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And our relationship has flourished.
I'm really happy to hear that for you.
Thanks. But I don't want to hog the show here. I brought this up because we always had Thanksgiving at my sister's for over 30 years. And this being Thanksgiving, it's not easy. You know, I can accept it, but my kids and my grandkids, they're the ones suffering because of this, you know.
Thanks
for letting me share, and I'm going to pass them.
And all you can do is be a good example and be very careful never to criticize the person who's resenting you, no matter what. In front of others especially. What's going on up here, pray to God about it. Just don't let it come out there, especially in front of the grandkids, I would say.
Well, I want to take a completely different approach, Deborah. I'm Leslie Alcoholic.
I'm Leslie.
I actually have two separate questions, but the first one is this. I don't recall you talking about any financial amends.
And I didn't.
And I'm wondering if you had experience or any thought, either direct or through people you sponsored, with making financial amends.
Well, it is a huge thing for a lot of people. And you know what I have to say? Fortunately, I didn't have any to make. I don't think I've ever really worked with anyone who's had to make significant financial amends. That's interesting. But I can tell you that
I was very close
with a person who had that problem. And, you know, I mean, it says in the book or everywhere else, you know, you work out a plan, you know, I owe you this money. Can't pay it all back right now, or maybe you can, whatever it is, but acknowledging the fact that you owe this money and I'm going to pay it back, and here's what I propose, or here's the check or the cash or whatever. I don't know. I never was a person that I don't know. I always worked really hard. My parents instilled an unbelievably strong work ethic in me, and I never that wasn't a thing for me. So I'm my bad for not mentioning it, but it is important. Clearly, it's a huge thing. That and cheating on your wife, or you know, something like that. Those are pretty huge. Or your husband, or whomever. And you have to, you know, in those cases, use the utmost discretion and the utmost compassion for the person who's been hurt. So I never could make a commitment to marriage until age 61. So I did not have that either. But I certainly had lots of improper behavior and things that happened that I regretted. So I had to make amends there as I could and was able. That's all.
Well, I have one more question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
This is on a another from another direction, because this was what was rattling in my brain.
Okay.
As you were talking about, you know, the immediately, at some point, never, you know, now, later, and never sorting of amends. I was wondering, you know, the step talks about that we make direct amends wherever possible, not whenever we want to. Or, you know, I'm wondering where this never thing comes from in your point of view and in your experience, because I wasn't given that now, later, and never thing. I was given make direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I guess that was the never, but I'm wondering where the never is that you're talking about comes from.
Oh, it just comes from sponsorship and listening to old timers, and it's not that it's part of the step, a formal part of the step, but it's a way to help motivate a person, you know, who is not too keen on doing this. And it gives them a way out. You know, get started anyway. Put them on your never list. In the step, it does talk about the thing, about the fact that this is a lifelong process, and that it might not be, it just might be not immediate that we see that person, or it may come up that as we're sober, you know, more things become apparent even after the first time through. I mean, the ninth step amends is an ongoing, it has been for me, an ongoing peeling away at the onion. And it doesn't say never. It does say direct amends in the step. That's true. But I just say it that way to try to make it an easier list to tackle. And it's not a real thing.
Thank you.
Who else has a question for Deborah? Whether anybody on Zoom?
I do, Greg.
Hi, Jack. Who's that sitting on your lap?
She's left. That's Maggie. She's left.
Oh. I wanted to get a better look at her.
Well, you'll probably get a chance.
Okay.
I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic. So I've been, if you already answered this, I apologize. It's been way too busy in here.
You're greeting people.
So I think I heard you say along the way something about an appointment, about making an appointment to make amends, and I wanted to sort of follow up with a thought and maybe a question. I think I remember hearing someone say that that it's a good idea to make an appointment or call to, you know, arrange to get together or meet or whatever it might be, and let the person that you're going to make the amend to know the reason for the visit, whatever it might be, so you don't sort of catch them cold. You give them an opportunity to think about it, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that. And I have a follow up when, you know, after you've had a chance to respond to that.
No, I mean I agree with it completely, because you want to maybe catch somebody off guard at a bad time, but you know, like you said, contacting them and letting them know the nature of the call and the purpose of a visit is, yes, very, very good advice and a very good way to start off on the right foot.
The follow-up, I thank you for that. And the follow-up I had to that is when, I wonder what your thoughts are on almost scripting out what you might want to say when you have a more challenging or difficult ends to make, whether you would recommend to someone you're working with or maybe your sponsor suggested to you that you actually write down some sort of organize your thoughts before you.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely. And I do that myself. I used to do that. I used to write it down a lot more than I do now, but I do still. If I have things, I'll never forget the first time I showed up with my notebook and told Dan I wanted to talk to him about some stuff. We were, oh my God, you know, I had some notes I wanted to cover a few things, you know what I mean? So it doesn't happen that I do that. I mean, I've only done it to him once, I think, but so far. Anyway, but there have been people that are very, you know, well, they're difficult, very sick people. And it takes every ounce of self-restraint to not just grab them by the throat and choke them or something, you know, but and so being focused and on what you're there to do and what you want to say and keeping it, you know, simple, short and sweet. That's how I say, you know, I was wrong, A, B, and C. What can I do to make this right? Keep it as simple as possible. And whatever the person says, if you don't know what to do with it right away, you're like, oh, holy crap, I wasn't expecting it. I say, well, you know, okay, let me consult with some of my sponsor in AA, and I'll get back to you. I mean, there's always a measured way to just about handle any situation when you're prepared for it. But if you go in there unprepared, it might not go so well.
Thank
That's
you.
What I'd say, yeah.
Anyone else?
That's a wrap.
I think that's it. Thank you, Deborah.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.